This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Got another hour of old-time radio crime for you this week, beginning with Barry Craig, confidential investigator. We'll hear his story from March 2nd, 1955, titled Sweet Larceny. After that, it's Calling All Cars and the Crimson Riddle, their episode from July 9th, 1936.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Exercise can be beneficial or it can kill you. One guy I know walked himself to death. But still it figured, seeing that the walk he took was the last mile.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. In these supersonic times, with the great wide world shrinking to the size of a pretzel, crime is global. Chase a hood across New Jersey and you're likely to catch him in Botany Bay, or in Algeria, or Madagascar. In view of all this, the cablegram on my desk one merry morning didn't surprise me a bit. It had been dispatched from mid-ocean. The dateline read, SS Shalimar. The text of it said, arriving Friday, 6 p.m. Please see to arrangements for armored truck at pier for safe transfer of the priceless Barbary tomb relics. You were highly recommended by an official of the Cairo police. Signed, Oscar Melamed. Priceless cargo of anything generally brings out the worst in people, and this one was no exception. Hello?
Mr. Craig?
And this is?
I'm Lisa Barnum. I'd like to discuss something with you. Something extremely important.
Capital letter B?
Capital letter B?
B for the Barbary collection.
Why, you're uncanny.
Yeah. I learned the art of divination from one-note Olio Myers.
One-note Olio Myers?
Yeah, a trombone player in the T-Bone Casino Philharmonic.
Go ahead. Finish your joke.
Olio always knew on Friday he was going to get canned Saturday.
Can we meet and talk as soon as possible?
Well, why not?
I'll come to your place.
No, I'll come to your place.
But I'd much rather.
I prefer women in their natural habitat, doll. It helps cement a truer understanding. Lisa Barnum lived in a building that had a taxidermist in the downstairs store. While I looked for her doorbell in the row of eight bell pushers, a stuffed chimpanzee came out of the taxidermist to stick a gun in my ribs.
Looking for somebody?
Yes, I am.
Lisa Barnum. You're calling on her?
I confess.
Then you're with me from now on.
Your gun says.
My gun says. You see that green and gold job over there?
Snazzy.
Well, take a spin in it. You and me.
Vertically?
Oh, you mean sitting up.
You got quite a grasp of the English.
No. You won't be sitting up.
I won't?
You'll be laying down. Turn to a side a little, huh?
This much?
Yeah. I like hitting them on the side of the ear.
Every man to his taste.
No yelling now when you get it.
I'll try to be a gentleman about it.
We don't want to be scaring people.
I came to with my left ear as big as Dumbo the elephant's. I tried stretching my legs to see how the old blood was circulating. And I knocked over what sounded like a garbage can. I reached a hand out in the pitch dark to get the feel of my surroundings. Almost strangled a cat. I tried getting my bearings by scent. My lungs began to choke up from what smelled like a poison gas barrage. I ain't saying the obvious, but where am I?
In a cellar.
And where are you in this blackout?
Over here, sitting on a box.
Why?
Why not?
Now that stumps me. Say, where's that mustard gas blowing from?
You really disapprove of my cologne.
When I get it in lethal doses.
How do you feel?
Mainly perplexed.
Perplexed? The answers are simple, really.
They always are when you know them. So inform me.
Here?
You know a better location?
Mertz's drugstore, just down the block. You'll want penicillin ointment on that ear before it infects. Here, I'll help you up.
I've always relied on the kindness of women, Lisa. You no doubt are Lisa Bonham.
Yes, I am Lisa Bonham.
In Mertz's, I got one ear swabbed and taped while Lisa bent my other ear.
I saw you assaulted on my stoop. I was upstairs at the front window.
What's your floor?
Second. I ran down to the street to see you thrown into that man's automobile.
That man being?
Why, I don't know. I hailed a taxi cab and followed you.
Why?
Why? What would you have me do?
Well, yell police good and loud. If you were really alarmed about me. However, go on with it.
You were carried into that cellar and abandoned there. When it was safe, I...
You joined me?
Yes.
Oh, my heroine.
You are an irritating man.
Time out while I check through my pockets.
Well? Is anything missing?
Something is.
Your wallet?
No.
Then,
A cablegram I got this morning.
A cablegram?
Don't play dumb.
All right, I won't. A cablegram telling you where and when Oscar Melamed would arrive.
Oscar Melamed and precious cargo.
The man who assaulted you was after the information.
Obviously, and he's got it. And what are you after, baby?
It's a long story.
Well, try condensing it into a few words.
All right. Our family name was Barbary, before it was changed to Barnum.
I get the emphasis.
My uncle, Dexter Barbary, was an Egyptologist. He spent his entire mature life in search of tomb relics.
You make him sound dead.
He vanished without a trace 2 years ago.
Well, where was he then?
In Alexandria, Egypt. My last contact with him was a letter he sent me. I have the letter here if you'd care to read it.
Oh, later. But meanwhile, you brief me on the contents of it.
The letter states that he'd come upon a priceless collection of Byzantine tomb relics. That he was registering them in his name, Barbary, as the Barbary Collection.
And?
And, period.
And of Uncle Dexter.
Yes.
And you suspect foul play?
I believe he was murdered and that his collection was stolen.
I see. Are you the last known living Barbary?
If Uncle Dexter is dead, yes, I am.
Finish what's on your mind.
The tomb relics rightfully belong to me.
So sue for them.
Sue? Should I really be so proper, Mr. Craig? Only sue the man who caused my uncle's murder?
The accused being my current client.
Oscar Melamed.
Well, now answer me this. How did you know the Barbary Collection was on board the SS Shalimar, en route to here?
I don't care to disclose my sources of information.
Then you can never be my client.
Why can't I be?
Secretive clients worry me. I always imagine they're taking my head size.
Taking your head size?
So the dunce cap will fit nice and snug. Friday, 6 p.m., found me on the pier where the SS Shalimar had docked, as ordered. And also, as ordered, I had an armored truck hired and standing by for the safe and orderly transfer of the Barbary Collection. A guy in a red oriental fez who had introduced himself as Oscar Melamed stood with me, watching two giant-sized crates being loaded on the armored truck.
I am grateful for your very conscientious services, Mr. Craig.
Repeat that to yourself when you get my bill. Now, when the collection's all loaded, where does it go?
I have given your driver written instructions.
Don't call him my driver. I got the armored car service out of a telephone directory. I make no guarantees.
The collection is to be stored in a vault. I have already made the arrangements.
What's it all worth, Melamed, in round figures?
$200,000-$300,000.
Well, that explains the buzzards buzzing around.
Every thief in the world has plans to steal the Barbary collection.
Well, we've got at least one native hood around, eager to liven up the competition.
One?
Mm-hmm.
There will be 20, Mr. Craig. You will see.
Well, the junk's loaded and bolted in, Melamed. You want me to ride on the truck?
No.
Be a lot smarter if I did.
The driver has his instructions. Let him go. We will remain here.
Well, you're sure casual with 300 G's, Melamed.
I do not want you injured, Mr. Craig. That is why you remain here with me.
Now, just what's that supposed to mean? Ah, that sounds like there's something up your sleeve. Some nice hunk of Oriental cunning.
Where is your police headquarters, Mr. Craig?
Raymond and Sixth. Why?
Let us go there together and await the report of the daring theft.
Theft of the Barbary collection?
Yes. The theft of the Barbary collection.
At police headquarters on Raymond and Sixth, we haunted the teletype machine. Completing our trio was a sallow-cheeked sergeant named Joe Tuesday, who looked as if crime gave him an acid stomach.
I've had dizzy characters popping into headquarters before.
Hey, look it.
Look it?
What the ticker tape is saying.
Huh? Oh. Armored truck seized by gang in machine gun raid at corners of Beaver and Howard. Driver and guard kidnapped. Order statewide alert.
Well, you're a champ prognosticator, Melamed. With the hijacked armored car problem in the laps of the Metropolitan Police, Melamed and yours truly went for a spin in my jalopy. The joyride was his idea.
Pier 17, Hoboken. You choose the proper approach, Mr. Craig. But first, you have an important thing to attend to.
Like?
Like the automobile behind us. See, in your mirror?
Yeah. We're being trailed, all right. An old New York custom. Familiar job, the one behind us. Green and gold convertible.
You have seen it before?
I'm getting a nostalgic twinge in my ear. The bum one. Well, shall we tangle with them or lose them?
Lose them, of course.
Fasten your safety belt. Before the green and gold job behind us gave up a hopeless chase, they sent out a signal of defeat.
They are shooting at us.
We're out of range, Melamed. And get your fingers out of my knee.
But I'm nervous.
Who isn't? Now wave a last fond goodbye to the boys. Alone at last on Pier 17, Hoboken, a banana boat was whistling hello to the USA.
Ah, the Susie Q.
Well, why should a banana freighter give you that radiant glow of happy health, Melamed?
Can't you guess, Mr. Craig?
Yeah, I can at that. Sitting amidst mountains of bananas aboard the Susie Q is a big piece of ancient Egypt.
A Barbary collection.
Dummy crates aboard the SS Shalimar. The real McCoy aboard the Susie Q.
A necessary subterfuge. I am sorry to have used you as a...
Decoy is the word. It's okay with me, so long as justice triumphs. But is justice triumphing, Melamed?
I do not understand your question.
I've got a suspicious nature.
But you trust your own judgment.
Yeah, I do that. And no offense intended, mind you, but you personally don't come off too good in my judgment.
You have doubts about my integrity?
Swine that I am, yes.
The ways of the East are perhaps strange to the West.
$300,000 spells bonanza even in the Hindustani tongue.
But I am the owner of the Barbary collection.
I've heard other points of view on that,
Other points of view?
Yeah. A doll named Lisa Barnum. Lisa Barnum Barbary. Niece of Dexter Barbary.
Oh, I see. Now I understand the reason for your suspicion.
It's only one of my reasons.
Dexter Barbary was a guest in my country, an eccentric expatriate.
What do you mean, eccentric?
A better word would be fool. An amateur Egyptologist and an uninformed one. The man was a vagrant, a mere professional beggar.
But he registered a collection as the Barbary Collection. The one now aboard the Susie Q there.
A fraudulent registration, Mr. Craig. Barbary was in my employ as a gardener and chauffeur. He registered possessions belonging to me, Oscar Melamed. I have affidavits.
Oh, that's your story. Where is Barbary now?
I can only repeat rumors.
Like?
His death was reported. He had contracted a disease in the Kilimanjaro Ranges.
Kilimanjaro? What was Barbary doing in Hemingway's private ballpark?
Looking for fossil specimens. Now, if you will tell me, what is your fee?
Paying me off here and now, huh?
Yes, Mr. Craig. You have been useful, but now you are useless. How much?
Peel off a grand, Sahib, in New York coin. I took the grand and copped off, but I didn't go too far from my ex-client. I was on his tail, automotively speaking, all the way from the Susie Q to a warehouse in Newark, where the Barbary collection was unloaded and stored. I made careful note of the address. In my office the next morning, business began to boom. The chimpanzee who loved toying with my left ear. He had a gun in each hand. Hey, there's only one of me, Buster.
I carry two guns to balance the weight. I don't want one shoulder down lower than the other.
Oh, I see.
Remind yourself of something, Craig.
Meaning?
Where you went with Egypt when you shook my car yesterday.
Oh, Pier 17, Hoboken.
And then to where?
I don't know. I got paid off and canned at the pier.
Baloney.
Slice it, please.
A smart guy like you
would know where $300,000 worth of loot is stored.
Yeah, would know.
Mind if I pry into your character a little?
What befoozles you about me?
How a creep straight out of a Manhattan sewer got himself in the middle of a Cairo-Egypt conspiracy.
I got a friend on the lam in Egypt. Maxim Odessa, 3-time loser, so he can't ever come home. He sent me a letter.
About the collection?
Yeah, about.
Then you're freelancing.
I got a few pool players in with me.
On your way out, surrender your guns to Sergeant Joe Tuesday.
Joe Tuesday? Where is he?
In the lobby, running the elevator, on the back stairs, and on the roof. You know what an octopus Joe Tuesday is.
You got cops staked out, huh?
For your exclusive benefit, Buster. I'm a guy who takes pride in his ears.
So I had
sticks and stones.
Oh, blast my way out.
You'll make an unbeautiful corpse. Exit smiling, Buster.
Imagine me walking into a cop's stakeout. Me, Ponjo.
You're beginning to bore me. Skidoo now. After Ponjo, the 10th Avenue Arab, came Lisa. In top form, throwing curves at me.
I thought over what you said.
And?
I decided to take your advice.
And?
I engaged an attorney. The firm of Brendel, Kirtle, and Damhauser.
You're suing Oscar Melamed?
For the Barbary collection. We've already served papers.
A summons and complaint.
And a restraining order. Melamed is not to take the collection out of the country without consent of the court.
What adjudication are you after?
Sale of the collection and the proceeds of it to me.
300 grand, huh?
Approximately.
Lots of mink and banana royals. What about the alleged murder of your dear Uncle Dexter?
There isn't much I can do about a murder done in Egypt or elsewhere.
Yes, there would be the jurisdictional problem. Now, you want to inspire trust and confidence in me?
Yes. So very much, Barry.
I wondered when you'd begin to coo Barry at me.
You wondered?
Yeah. A doll finds her lie is showing. She brings sex appeal into the breach. It's not as old as sin, baby. It's older.
What do I have to do to prove my utter good faith?
Prove you really had an amateur Egyptologist uncle named Dexter Barbary.
Prove? You don't think I made him up?
Didn't you?
Why, if this isn't... Mr. Craig, do you often have whams on your head?
Only when my feet ache. Let's talk about the morning's news, huh? The Barbary collection's on every front page.
So it is. So what?
$4 million news break, figuring the space and pictures. And here, a feature interview with Oscar Melamed. How his oriental ingenuity baffled every Raffles from Tibet to Hoboken, New Jersey.
But it all does qualify as big news. Or does it mean something else to your warped mind?
It does, doll. But I won't tell you. Not until I tell it to Oscar Melamed first. Now, try sitting on my lap. I'll toss you out of the window.
Why, you're nothing but a stick of wood.
Oh, I'll just bet you tell that to all the boys. Melamed had company when I found him. Company just about to leave. Distinguished, middle-aged, Black Homburg. The type American tycoon with nervous money and a collector's itch. I caught their parting words.
Then I'll assume it's agreed, Mr. Melamed.
We are in complete harmony, Mr. Cartwright.
You drive a hard bargain, but I can afford it. Good day.
Good day, Mr. Cartwright.
Tell me, which Cartwright is it? The banker or the steel baron?
Mr. Cartwright is an oil.
Marinated in your special brand of oil.
Why have you come here?
Putting it bluntly, to stymie a bunco game.
A bunco game? Now, what absurdity.
The trash you're trying to palm off as treasure.
You call the Barbary collection trash?
I do. And all the hijinks and publicity around it is only a build-up for susceptible suckers. What you're really selling him is a collection of newspaper headlines. The publicity has him so dazzled he won't remember to inspect the merchandise. Oh, I see you stopped laughing. Okay, if I bore you with the details of your fraud...
I'm listening.
Thanks. Lisa Barnum's in with you, a full partner in the swindle. Her phony uncle routine, and now the lawsuit against you, is just more stage dressing. Like that armored car and the two fighters. All more bait for suckers.
And the gangsters? Are they also full partners with me?
No, no. The mob was on its own. Flies around honey, or what they thought was honey. But all grist for your scheme. The shenanigans of the mob got you more juicy headlines. Helped make trash really look like treasure. Now, you going to take a rest gracefully? Or are you the type who blows his fez?
Despite these circumstances, Mr. Craig, I am forced to admire you.
Well, thanks for saying it. It's what I live for. The goodwill and admiration of my clients. After all, man doesn't work for bread alone.
You have been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Sweet Larceny, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story of Corpse on the Town, about which Barry Craig has this to say. In Corpse on the Town, death rewrites the script of a Broadway show when a bachelor producer becomes a widower in two easy stages, marriage and murder. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Directed by Andrew C. Love, our cast included Edith Terry, Lou Krugman, Jan Arden, and Jonathan Holt. Join Groucho Marx for You Bet Your Life tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Calling all cars, a copyrighted program created by the Rio Grande Oil Company. Calling all cars, San Francisco police calling all cars. Wanted in connection with murder in Visitation Valley. Young girl, described as pretty, black hair, medium height, wearing green dress, arrest and hold. That is all. Every listener to this program knows that it is sponsored by Rio Grande Cracked Gasoline. You also know that many, many cities and counties specify Rio Grande Cracked. That it powers more police and emergency cars than any other brand, everywhere it is sold. But do you know what a difference the same gasoline makes in the feel of your own car? You've heard us talk about police car performance. But do you realize that this is not just an advertising phrase? What can we do to induce you to use the same gasoline that police and emergency cars use? Let us remind you that Rio Grande Cracked costs no more than other quality gasolines. And city operating records prove conclusively that it delivers more miles to the gallon than lower quality gasolines. You get greater speed from your car. You will feel the thrill of greater power under the hood. Your motor will be cooler, more efficient, and you'll feel less vibration. Will you give us an opportunity to prove all this to you? Drive into any Rio Grande station, fill up with cracked gasoline, and you'll agree there's a world of difference. Thank you. And now it is our pleasure to present the Sheriff of San Francisco County, who will speak to you from the studio of station KFRC in San Francisco, Sheriff Murphy.
Good evening. If ever a criminal case proved that crime does not pay, the one you are about to hear does. The guilty ones are still serving lifetime sentences behind the thick gray walls of San Quentin Prison. I particularly remember this crime because I was acquainted with one of the relatives of the victim who was an old man living by himself, injuring no one, engaged in the peaceful pursuit of raising goats and selling the milk for a bare livelihood. The criminals did not obtain a single cent from him, for he had no money. But listen to how it happened.
Just a few miles outside the bustling mass of people, the never-ending streams of noisy traffic, the towering buildings that make up the harbor city San Francisco, lies a small sloping valley. Although today it has become a thriving little community, at the time this case occurred, it was dotted here and there with tiny sun-baked shacks and inhabited mostly by sheep and goat herders. It was here in one of the tumble-down houses that Gaetano Marcelli lived, a recluse, his nearest neighbor some 300 yards away. Nearly 70 years old, Marcelli supports himself by selling milk from his small herd of goats to the inhabitants of the valley and to the occasional tourists who happen to stop in and refresh themselves before continuing their journey. One morning in September, Gaetano is tending to a sick goat when he hears a car approaching. Looking up, he sees it stop in front of his place. Sees two men and a girl get out and walk toward him.
Ah. Hello, Tanner. You got some nice fresh goat milk?
No, gato, none of the 2 days, no. But maybe from yesterday I got some. I think it is still fresh.
That'd be all right, Pop. We've never tasted any goat's milk, and we thought we'd like to try it.
All right. You come into the house. I'm afraid to use some finer goat's milk, yeah.
Okay. That suits us. Have you?
Sure. Perfect.
You like to sit down, eh? Maybe the lady she's tired.
Oh, no. No, I'm all right. Thank you. I'd rather stand.
Yeah, don't worry about her. Now, let's get some milk.
All right. It is here in this step over here.
I got it, Johnny. Let's stop this stalling. Now, keep your shirt on. I'll take care of him when he brings the milk.
All right, here you are, mister. It ain't quite so fresh, but she's good and cool.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Now, suppose you tell us where you keep that dough you've got hidden around here.
What should that?
You heard him. Where's your money? We know you got plenty, and we're here to relieve you of it.
Why, you must make a mistake. I got no money. I only got it as a good cement.
Now, listen to me, old-timer. Huh? We happen to know you've got $10,000 in cash hidden around this dump of yours somewhere.
Now, listen.
And we're not leaving till we get it, see? Now, how about it?
I'm going to tell you, Mr.
You want it? You want to be a good boy and tell us where it's hidden, or do we have to get tough?
Oh, Johnny, you promised you wouldn't.
Shut up, Edie. I'll handle this my own way. Well, my silly, kick in and make it fast.
I'm a sweat to you. I got no money. I got nothing but a good cement coming up.
Oh,
Johnny. Shut up. I'll make this old brother talk if I have to break every bone in his mangy body.
Please, mister, I tell you the truth. Please, please don't hit me no more. I'm an old man.
All right.
Please.
Stop crying and tell us where you got that dough.
No, please, I can't give you no money. I ain't the kind of money, I tell you.
Old bird wants to sing. I'll show you what he'll do. Hand me that crap.
Johnny, you promised you wouldn't hurt the old man. You gave me your word.
I said I wouldn't hurt him if he talked.
No.
You won't talk,
no? No, please. Please, no. What are you going to do with that crap?
You tell me where the money is.
I ain't got the money.
You ain't got
the money. No. Don't.
Shut him up. Shut him up. Stop. I didn't know it. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the help, Phil. Now tear this place apart. That dough's around here somewhere.
San Francisco Police Department.
I want to report a murder.
One moment, please. I'll connect you with homicide.
Homicide Department, McGinn speaking.
Hello. This is Sidney Moore, Scott and Visitation Valley. There's been a murder out here. At least I think it's a murder.
All right, young fellow. One thing at a time. Where exactly are you now?
Out at Old Montana Marcellus Place. It's at 605 Wallace Avenue.
605 Wallace Avenue. All right, go ahead.
Well, my sister-in-law found the old man a few minutes ago lying in a pool of blood in his house. He's beating up something awful.
Did you try to talk to him or anything?
Oh, no, sir. He's not able to talk. I think he's dead.
All right, you stay right there. And don't touch anything, understand?
Well, don't worry. I won't.
Good, I'll be right out. Hey, Mac.
Yes, sir.
Send an ambulance out to this address right away. Tell the boys to stand by if the guy is dead. If not, take him in and patch him up. I'll be out there about the time they are.
By the time Lieutenant McGinn arrives at the little shack, the ambulance crew has already taken the unconscious but still living Marcelli to the hospital. McGinn asks Deputy District Attorney Walter Schiller to go to the hospital and question the victim, then settles down to investigation of the facts at the shack.
Miss Jones, you were the person who discovered the old man, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Suppose you tell me about it. Just what happened?
Well, I've been buying goat's milk from him every day for almost a year. So today I came over to get some and found him that way. All beaten and crushed. Oh, Lieutenant, it's awful.
Yes, of course, I know. I can appreciate how you must feel. Now, have you any idea who might have done this?
No, sir. There just doesn't seem to be any reason for it. Why, old Gaetano was one of the most harmless people I've ever known. He couldn't have had any enemies.
No, and yet someone beat him up. That doesn't quite jive, does it?
I don't know. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, that's all right, miss. I won't need you anymore. Suppose you go home and get some rest. You look as though you needed some.
Thank you, Lieutenant. I'm sorry to be such a crybaby.
Oh, I think nothing of it. You'll just run along now, and thanks for the help.
Beg pardon, Lieutenant, but there's a woman here says she knows something about this. You want to talk to her?
Why, certainly, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. This is Lieutenant McGinn, ma'am. He's in charge here. You just tell him what you know.
Well, I don't know that it has anything to do with all this, really, but yesterday in the late afternoon sometime, I seen a car come up and pass Gaetano's house real slow. And then a few minutes later, come back by again and stop. Just down the road there where I could see it plain as day.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, there was a couple of young men in it and a girl. A pretty girl she was, too.
Well, what makes you think they had anything to do with this?
Oh, they was acting funny-like, peering over at Gaetano's place and talking among themselves. Mm-hmm. They looked suspicious to me.
Can you give me any sort of a description of them?
Well, best as I could see, the girl had on a bright green dress. And she had black hair, very black hair.
Do you notice anything about the car?
I ain't much at knowing one from another. It had white tires, though. I remember that.
White tires? Pardon me a moment, ma'am. Hey, Sergeant.
Hey, yes, sir.
Go find the nearest phone and call headquarters. Tell them to get out a general search for a car with white wall tires. Also a girl with black hair wearing a bright green dress. And make it fast.
Yes, sir.
Also have every car rental place in town checked. Every garage.
Yes, sir.
Eddie.
Yes, Lieutenant.
You stick around here. Question everybody who knows anything and report to me. I'm going over to the hospital and see the old man, if he's still with us.
And at the hospital, Detective Lieutenant McGinn joins Deputy Schiller at the bedside of old Gaetano Marcelli. It is obvious the old man has only a few hours of life left.
Gaetano. Gaetano. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I hear that. I hear it, but I got no money. No. Only got the milk.
He's delirious.
If only he could get to tell me. Tell me who it was. Gaetano. Now listen to me. Who did this, Gaetano? Who hit you?
No money. Only got the milk. Oh, please. Please, mate, don't hit me no more. Please.
No use, Ellen. You can't get anything out of him.
I'm afraid you're right, Walter. If only he could remember. It might clear the whole thing up.
Oh, I've tried to talk to him ever since I got out here. So far, he doesn't do anything but mumble about money and goat's milk.
Yeah, I heard.
They want my money. They beat me. Real bad. Real bad.
He's talking. Who beat you, Gaetano? Try to think. We want to help you.
They beat me. The man and the girl, she was kind of pretty, but they beat me. Oh, beat me with clubs. Bad. Beat me.
You get that, Walter?
Yeah.
He said there was a girl. And the people I talked to out there gave me a description of a pretty girl and two men who were around the place today. Come on.
Okay.
I'm going out to look for a car with white tires driven by two men and a girl in a green dress.
All that day, Lieutenant McGinn and Deputy Schiller make the rounds of garages. You drive rental agencies. Keep an alert eye out for the wanted car and occupants, but no trace of it can be found. The following morning, Gaetano Marcelli dies, having given no further clue as to the identity of his assailant. And McGinn turns with more determination than ever to the task of locating the car. At last, 2 days after the murder, he approaches his 15th rental place for the day, addresses the manager.
How do you do? You're the manager of this place?
Yeah, that's me. What can I do for you? Rent you a nice car?
Well, not exactly. I'm looking for a car, though. A car with white tires on it.
White tires? You mean, you want white tires? Sure, I have just the thing.
You have one with white tires?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, this is too good to be true.
What's that?
Oh, I was just thinking out loud. I'd like to introduce myself. Detective Lieutenant McGinn of the San Francisco Police.
A policeman, sir? What if I didn't a policeman should be asking me questions?
You don't have to worry. I don't know what you've done, and I don't care. What I really want is the names of the people who last rented that car with white tires and the date it was rented out.
Sure, that's easy. I got it right here in my books.
Fine.
Let me see now. Would you have any idea about when it might have been out?
Yeah, I think so. This is the fourth, isn't it?
That's right.
2 days ago would be the second. Suppose you look around the second of this month.
Sure. August the 9th, August the 20th. September. Here they are. September the 2nd. That's a Chrysler Roadster. Let's see. Huh. It was out on the 2nd.
When did it go out?
Wait a minute. Well, here it is, on the 1st.
Who rented it?
The names here are Philip Mangarine and John Cusack. Oh, yeah, I remember them now. There was the fellas I had a little trouble about money with.
What was that?
Well, they said they'd bring me some money when they came back, but they didn't. I had a terrible time getting them to pay.
You got their addresses there?
Sure, right here in Black on White.
Good. I'll take this book with me. It might be important.
Oh, but I got to have that in my business.
Ah, don't worry, we'll take good care of it. You can have it back as soon as I'm through with it. But right now, I need it more than you do.
Returning to his office, McGinn locks the valuable book in his safe, and taking two officers with him, proceeds at once to the address given by Philip Mangarine.
Here's the place, boys. I don't think we'll have any trouble, but I'll stand by in case. Mr. Mangarine?
Yes.
Put on your hat. You're taking a ride with us.
Hey, what's this all about?
Police officers, Mangarin. Now, come on, make it fast.
What's the charge?
Suspicion of murder. Take him in, boys.
And a few minutes later, at another rooming house...
All right, Cusack. No use talking. You're coming with us. And the less you say about it, the better.
Yeah, but what's it all about?
Funny how you fellows always say the same thing. But if you're interested, we're arresting you on suspicion of murder.
Murder?
Nasty word, isn't it, Cusack? All right, come on, get going.
Taking the protesting Johnny Cusack directly to his office, McGinn has Mangarine brought in too, and together the two men sit before him, an instant denial springing to their lips at every question.
What was your idea in bumping off the old man? That's what I'd like to know.
Yeah, it's a bum beef. We didn't bump him off, but anyone else. You got the wrong guy.
Oh, I don't think so. You boys are in a pretty tight spot. We know more about all this than you think we do.
Don't let him bluff you, Phil. He hasn't got anything on us and he knows it.
He's not bluffing anybody.
Right. And neither are you boys. Why don't you tell me the truth and get it over with?
We're telling you the truth.
You boys stick pretty close together, don't you? Well, just where were you on the morning of September the 2nd?
I don't remember.
Maybe I can refresh your memory for you. Have you ever seen this book before?
No.
Sure?
Yeah, I said no.
How about you, Cusack?
Yeah, I never seen it either.
Well, now, isn't that strange?
Yeah, what's so strange about it?
Simply the fact that both your names are written in it, as well as your addresses.
What? Where'd you get that book?
Oh, you begin to remember it now, huh?
I didn't say that. Let me see it closer.
Why, sure. Here, help yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sure, I've seen this before. Only I didn't recognize it at first.
How about you, Margarita?
Yeah, I remember it now, man. It's from that auto rental place.
Yeah, that's right. Now, what I want to know is, where did you go on the day you rented that car?
Well, we just drove around a bit. Didn't go anywhere in particular.
You didn't drive out to Visitation Valley by any chance, did you?
Well, I don't think so, no.
You don't think so? Don't you know where you drove?
I can't exactly remember everywhere we went.
Who was the young girl with you?
What young girl?
Don't tell me you've forgotten that, too. You certainly have a pretty bad memory. How about you, Mangarine? You remember the young lady?
Well,
all right, boys. All right, spill it. Run into a dead end, and you might as well tell me all about it.
Well, I don't see what difference it makes if we did have a dame with us. We didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, of course not. What was her name?
Edith.
Edith what?
Watson.
Now we're getting places. Where does this Edith live?
Listen, what do you have to go mixing her up in this for? She was just out riding with us,
sure,
I'm telling you.
Sure, I know. Now, where does she live?
Over on Larkin Street, the Bryn Mawr apartment.
Thanks. Well, I guess you boys can go back to yourselves until I talk to your girlfriend. And while you're there, think it over. Maybe that by the time I'm back, you'll have remembered a little more all about this.
But upon arriving at the Bryn Mawr, McGinn is met by an elderly woman who says she is the girl's mother.
I've come to have a little talk with your daughter, ma'am. Is she in?
Why, no. Edith isn't living here anymore. That is, not at the present time.
Well, could you tell me where I might find her?
Well, I'm afraid I can't. You see, Edith told me she wanted to visit a friend of hers who lives in Los Angeles. And the other day, that is, 2 days ago, she packed up and left. I don't know exactly where she's staying down there.
Didn't she give you any idea where you could reach her? Any forwarding address?
Well, she mentioned the Whitehall apartment. But I couldn't say for sure whether that's where she is or not. What is it you wanted?
Oh, nothing important, ma'am. Just wanted to talk to her, that's all. But if she's in Los Angeles, well, I guess I'll just have to wait till she comes back here. Well, thanks for the information, anyhow.
Well, you're quite welcome. Only I'd like to know why you wanted to talk to her.
Oh, it was nothing important, really. Don't give it another thought. If she writes you or anything, why, just jot down her address and maybe I'll come back to see her later. Good day, ma'am. Homicide Squad, Los Angeles Police. Please send someone to Whitehall Apartments, your city, to pick up girl. Name, Edith Watson. Black hair, wearing green dress. This girl wanted in connection with murder. Hold and notify this department. Again, Homicide Department, San Francisco Police.
Upon receipt of this message, Lieutenant Hamilton of the Los Angeles Police Department, in company with a fellow officer, go at once to the apartment house where they interview the landlady. Discover that a tenant of hers has a guest, a young girl with black hair. Climbing the stairs, the detectives stop in front of one of the doors. Then...
Who is it?
Police, ma'am. Open the door.
Oh. Well, just a minute. Yes?
You the party that lives here?
Yes.
You have a guest staying with you, is that right?
Why, yes, a friend of mine.
Is she in now?
Why, yes. Do you want to speak to her?
If you don't mind.
Edith?
Oh, yes?
There's a man here to see you.
Oh, all right, I'm coming.
Yes? What is it? They're policemen.
Police?
Oh. I'm afraid you'll have to come along with us, miss. They got orders to arrest you for the San Francisco police.
Oh, but I haven't done anything.
Yeah, that's all right, ma'am. We can talk about that later. Right now, we're in kind of a hurry. And, you'd better come along too, miss. That's a matter of formality, of course.
Well, I don't know what Edith is mixed up in, but of course I'll come.
That's fine. All right. Let's go.
Next day, Edith is taken to San Francisco and turned over to Lieutenant McGinn. And McGinn, wise to the ways of a woman, questions her in his office.
Sit down, Edith.
Thank you.
There are just a few things I want to talk to you about, and if you'll answer them truthfully, why, this won't take long.
Yes, sir.
In the first place, why did you go to Los Angeles?
Why? Why, I don't know. I'd wanted to go down there for a visit for a long time, and this seemed like a good time to do it.
Why at this particular time? Why not before?
Before what?
Before what happened out in Visitation Valley.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Would you like me to tell you about it?
Why?
Well, it isn't a very pretty story. It's about an old man. So old, he couldn't defend himself. He got beaten with a club until he didn't have a bone left in his body that wasn't broken.
Oh, please.
Not a very pretty picture, is it, Edith?
It's horrible.
Why don't you save yourself the details and tell me exactly what happened out there that day?
I asked him not to hit him. I pleaded with him, but they wouldn't listen to me.
And what happened?
They beat him and beat him and kept asking him where his money was hidden. And he kept saying that he didn't have any money and kept begging them not to hit him. And they kept right on.
They? You mean Cusack and Mangarine?
Yes, they did it. I don't care what they think. I hate them. They beat him.
Will you testify to this in court, Edith?
In court? Do I have to say that in front of them?
Think of what they did.
Yes. Think of what they did. All right. I'll tell everything. And I hope they hang them. I hope they hang them.
Armed with this confession and a promise that Edith will testify in court, McGinn closets himself with prosecuting attorney Peter Mullen. And the two of them spend hours preparing a foolproof case against Mangarine and Cusack.
I don't see how we can slip up on this, Alan. It's perfect.
Yeah, I know it's perfect. But I don't want to take any chances. I've had too many perfect cases suddenly blow up in my face when some slippery mouthpiece pulled a lot of strings.
I know. I've had the same thing happen to me.
The main idea is to let those two think they have us bluffed. That's why I don't want to tell them about the girl's confession. They might be able to think up some story between now and the time we go to trial.
You mean you want her for an ace in the hole, eh?
Exactly. We'll introduce as much evidence against them as we can from various witnesses and such, and then for the grand finale.
I get it. You've got a conviction practically in your hands, Alan.
Well, it all depends on you when we get into court. You're the one who does the talking there. I'm just a detective.
Well, don't worry. With a case like this, I can't lose.
And one day in Judge J.J. Tribuco's court in San Francisco, the trial begins. In a steady line, the witnesses are sworn in, their testimony given. First comes a milkman who says,
"Sure, I seen him leaving Marcelli's house that morning, but I didn't think nothing of it. Lots of times people stop by to buy some goat's milk from the old man. If I'd have known what was going on, I'd have sure stopped him, and you can bet your life on that."
Next witness is a friend of Cusack's who says,
"Yes, sir. I saw Johnny driving a car with white tires. I yelled at him, but he didn't seem to want to see me. It was with that other fellow there and the girl."
"Get out of there, you crazy!"
One after another, witnesses are produced, and each one tightens the noose around the prisoner's neck. And then, late one afternoon, after 3 days of the trial, prosecuting Mullins plays his final card.
"I should like to call Miss Edith Watson to the stand, please."
"Miss Edith Watson. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you guard?"
"I do."
"Take the witness chair, please." "What's the idea of putting her on the stand? What's that dame up to?"
"I don't know. I don't like it."
"Miss Watson, listen. I want you to tell the jury, in your own words, exactly what happened in Gaetano Marcella's house the morning in question."
"Well, Johnny Cusack and Phil Mangarine and I drove out to the old man's house. We were going to rob him, but I didn't know there was going to be any violence. I thought they were just going to rob him. But when the old man said he didn't have any money, before he started to beat him, I begged him to stop. Johnny's coming.
Officer, no step. Officer, would you can't watch the Johnny's prison."
But talk she does. And when she is through, there is no doubt in the jurors' minds as to what verdict to bring in. After only 15 minutes, they return with a verdict of guilty and a recommendation for leniency for the girl. And as a result, the following day, Judge Tribuco pronounces sentence.
"Philip Mangarine, John Cusack, stand and face the court. Before I pass judgment on you, have you anything to say?
Yeah, but it wouldn't do no good.
Very well. You have been found guilty of first-degree murder. Unfortunately, the members of the jury have made it impossible for me to give you the sentence you deserve. However, I can do the next best. John Cusack and Philip Mangarine, for the murder of Gaetano Marcelli, I sentence you to life imprisonment in the state penitentiary.
And a few days later, Edith Watson is given a sentence of 10 years, suspended, and put on probation. Judge Tribuco explaining his actions by saying,
in turning state evidence, this girl's testimony was instrumental in convicting the actual killers. Also, it has never been shown that she was in any way connected with the murder, although she was a party to the attempted robbery. Therefore, I feel that a long-term probation would serve a much better purpose than a jail sentence.
Calling All Cars invites every boy and girl to join the Junior Police Department. We offer you a complete detective outfit free. Get Dad or Mother or one of your neighbors to drive you into your neighborhood Rio Grande station. Ask for your free copy of the Calling All Cars news and learn all about Rio Grande's 14 free gifts. We owe a great deal to you millions of boys and girls who listen to this program. You have induced your parents to try Rio Grande crack, and hundreds of letters testify to the unusual distinctive qualities of this gasoline. All we ask is that you give Rio Grande crack a fair trial. We are confident that your car will develop greater speed and power and that you'll get a new thrill out of Rio Grande's police car performance. There's another big value at all Rio Grande stations, and that is Sinclair Motor Oil. When you get your next crankcase drain, give your Rio Grande dealer the job. He'll refill with Sinclair Motor Oil from refinery sealed cans, and you'll quickly discover your motor runs smoother, cooler, and that you need seldom add another quart. That's because all the impurities are removed from Sinclair Motor Oil. Those elements that cause carbon, that gum up your valves, that burn away so easily in hot motors, are already extracted from Sinclair Motor Oil, leaving only a pure oil that gives you more miles for your money than ever before.
Calling all cars, San Francisco Police calling all cars. Cancellation broadcast 137. Suspects in this case now in custody. That is all.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for the Rio Grande Oil Company.
That's going to do it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Barry Craig, Calling All Cars, past episodes of Case Closed, all the other shows, and everything Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there as well. And our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. I'll be back next week with more Case Closed. And Legacy of Laughs, our comedy podcast, will be returning soon as well. You can find out more about that on the website. But for now, that's it for this week. Thanks for joining me. I'll talk to you again soon.